You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We will be dressed to, you know, for my wife, it'll be to the nines. For me, it'll be to the sevens. But we will definitely, I'll be looking my best, which is, you know, upscale homeless.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And I know you guys aren't really, intending any of this personally. But the point
it's totally personal.
It is.
I've been brewing over this for over a month. This is personal, Chuck.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. We are the Monday edition, which means this is our more conceptual show, or that's the concept that we're pushing anyway. And I am your host on Mondays. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached on the Twitter machine at Just Chucking It. And fortunately for us, despite his ever-growing resume, we do still have Justin Mason with us on this particular Monday. How are you today, Justin?
I'm pretty exhausted. I only got about 2 or 3 hours of sleep before I had in work last night, been up all night, because I was watching the Super Bowl and the Eagles winning that Super Bowl. So, the beauty of the Super Bowl coming and going is now everybody is on, baseball time. We're no longer worried about football. Everybody has moved into baseball only, unless you're our special guest who does a crap ton of basketball as well.
Exactly. Now, we have a special guest today, and for weeks I was told that all I knew about this was that he was a Cleveland Indians fan, so I was preparing to talk to Chris Rose, but instead we get to talk to a gentleman that we did speak with last year, and our man Phil Nasons. Phil, how is everything with you today?
Everything is great, and I'm so thrilled that I don't have to talk about basketball for 1 hour today. That's so fantastic, and you said crap load, right, Justin?
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I read Twitter, they just say crap when they see my stuff. So, that was so much better, and I'm so uplifted, and I'm ready to talk a little baseball. It's so much fun to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
It is completely our pleasure, and we have a concept to talk about today that literally has been brewing for over a month and a half, because me and Justin got into a fairly heated debate for us, because we usually see things pretty close to eye to eye, and we got into a huge debate about utility players and about Nelson Cruz in particular in our chat room. And right before we decided that we were going to do an entire month of team previews. And so this has percolated for quite a while, and we're gonna speak a lot about the detriment and the possible advantage to drafting utility only players. And I want to preface this conversation a bit, because in a few of the leagues that I'm in, we have two utility spots, not just one, and I think that makes a huge difference. I also think there's a big difference when players have a legitimate shot at positional eligibility throughout the season versus just staying in your utility spot for the whole year. And I also want to mention a couple of the overall detriments, and then we'll get to Justin poo-pooing all of these thoughts. But one of the things I don't like about utilities is if I have six or seven teams or more. I think the random times that they sit when they play in the NL parks, and since that's no longer a scheduled week of, you know, two or three different months, since now that can happen on opening day or can happen at any time, I think it requires a little bit more roster maintenance in and of itself. And I also wanted to take note that while I was studying up the list of utilities that we made to talk about after our concept talk, I happened to notice that it was kind of like a MASH unit mixed with the Veterans Committee, meaning that there was just these are a lot of older players. And generally speaking, since the PED era, older players have not really held up all that well into their mid to late 30s. We will, of course, speak about an exception right off the bat when we get to our players. The only other base concept I want to mention is that when I construct rosters, I want to know that I'm covered at all the different positions. And if I take a utility player awfully early, I am later in the draft, I am bound to be taking a player at a different position than if I had taken a position player earlier. And I think there is some natural cost to that that Justin either doesn't see or wants to ignore even in his earliest picks. So, Justin, it's time for you to poo-poo the idea and tell me exactly why I'm crazy about those things I just said.
Well, those were a lot of caveats. There was a lot of small print there. But I can go along with most of it. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, I want to fill my roster slots with the most amount of production possible. I don't care what position it comes at. I'm not one of those guys that says, oh, I need to get power from first base, or I need to get speed from the middle infield. You know what? I'll take it wherever I can get it, and I'm going to construct my best overall team. I understand the idea that later in a draft, later in an auction, if you're unlikely or unwilling to take a utility-only player because you don't like the roster construction at the end, you don't like having a lack of eligibility with a lesser player, not wanting to take a guy late that is a DH or util-only coming into the season or even going to be that way the entire season. Nelson Cruz is a guy that we're talking about a guy who is a top 50 pick. You know, according to NFBC, ADP is currently going as the 54th pick overall, going behind guys like Justin Upton, like a full round behind Justin Upton. There's no rationale that he should be going that much later than Justin Upton. If you want to use it as a tiebreaker, if you value those two guys the same, you go, okay, I'd rather have Upton because he's got outfield eligibility. I can buy that argument, but I think your argument is a guy like Nelson Cruz is going to be a better player, but you still don't want him because he's util only. That, to me, is crazy because you're talking about, at this point, you're probably fourth, maybe fifth player on your team. How often do you move around your fourth or fifth draft pick on your team in your offense? You don't. You stick him at shortstop. You leave him at shortstop all year long, except for on days off in daily leagues. You're not moving him around, so what does it matter if he's stuck in the util spot? You weren't going to be replacing him anyways if he was in the outfield. It's really not that big of an issue. People who overrate positional flexibility with their first couple picks end up taking lesser players and getting lesser production, and that's my argument against this concept.
Well, that was eloquently put, and I, of course, have some retorts for it. But I also think it's going to be kind of interesting to hear Phil's two cents on this, because this is an issue that does happen in the fantasy basketball world as well, or in the world of basketball. But, Phil, have you given much thought, especially since we gave you a heads up here a few days ago, to how your feelings are about drafting guys that are only eligible in a utility slot?
I've given it no thought, and I'm going to tell you why. Because my entire fantasy sports career has been based on taking the best player available and not worrying so much about the position. I do that through benchmarks. I'm looking for benchmarks. I'm looking for so many home runs, so many stolen bases, blah, 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 until I get it done. So I don't care where I take my DH or utility spot. I just know that I have to get the best one available, and I have to let the chips fall where they may. You know, you brought up the fantasy basketball, Chuck, and you're right. You get so many of these guys who just center eligible. or power forward eligible. Point guard is another one where it's there's a lot more just point guards without dual eligibility. So we go through that a lot. And the secret to it all is, especially in an auction, is that what we want to do is if you got your eye on, say, let's say Nelson Cruz, like Justin said, he's number 54, around 54 ADP. He's $30 auction wise. When it's my turn to nominate him, I'm going to put Nelson Cruz out there, and I bet you I get him for half the price. And if I can get Nelson Cruz for $15, I don't care if he's playing against a National League team three nights. Don't care, because I'm going to get 40 home runs, man, for $15. Does that make sense?
It does to a certain extent. I think, you know, Nelson Cruz, for reasons that we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes, is sort of the most extreme example that that in recent times that I can remember. I have done some research and will harken back to some David Ortiz ADPs, et cetera, as well. So far I have a full panel against me, which isn't that hard to do because I am kind of a reactionary thinker. And so it makes for good podcasting, but it also makes people either annoyed with me. They like me or hate me, and I'm okay with that. Fortunately for us, our good friend and our longtime, our future Monday afternoon contributor is Andrew Dewhurst, and he is with us now. How's it going today, Andrew? And you can just jump right in, give us a Twitter handle, and tell us how you feel about our concept for the day.
I'm doing great, Chuck. Just living the dream here. You know, work 9 to 5, take some lunch and talk to you guys, which is probably going to be better than the rest of my day. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. Utility is an interesting spot. Just because there's not a lot of guys necessarily, but it's an important spot to fill if you can do it strategically.
Yeah, and Justin and Phil are bringing up good points, and we're sort of looking at the stud of all DH only style players right now, and that is Boomstick himself. He has found the fountain of youth in the other corner of the country, the nugget of the Northwest. You know, he's going to turn 38 years old in early 2018. He's been a binion of consistent production now, between 39 and 44 home runs each of the last four seasons. The Seattle offense was better last year. I mean, Nelson Cruz suddenly is breaking borders that we never, ever thought were going to be broken by a utility-only player. The highest ADP I could find for David Ortiz was 75th in 2012, and that was after he was coming off 32 home runs and 102 RBIs the year before. You know, in the heart of AL East country. I mean, this is the opposite end of the country. This is the AL East. They live baseball, and still the highest ADP I could find for David Ortiz was 75. And this morning when I looked, I had 49.7 as the ADP for Nelly Cruz. I think that ADP is absolutely bonkers. Not because I don't think that Nelson Cruz is a top 100 player, but just because I think, given both his age and the fact that he's not covering a position that you may very well struggle to cover later in the draft and you do not know yet when you're picking him, that I struggle to take him over people like Rhys Hoskins, that are both younger and have shown equal amounts of pop. And I also think it's crazy because the 38 home runs is not what it used to be to begin with. You're talking about a season where we're coming off uncharted territory for exactly how much power there was last season. And the main thing you're getting, because he's not running the bases anymore, everything you're getting from him is power and RBIs, which were far more plentiful. When we talk about other people, other picks, I've heard Nolan Arenado downgraded because all he gives you is home runs and RBIs. And suddenly out of nowhere, we have a utility only player jumping up 25 spots higher than David Ortiz did in the middle of a Boston offense that was unbelievable in an era that had a much deader ball. So I will right away. I'm gonna fire it in reverse.
I just want to jump in on that a little bit, though, Chuck. Statistically speaking, yes, home runs were up last year, but the average number of home runs was up last year. The number of people that hit 40 or more stayed actually pretty stagnant. So that 40 home runs you get from Cruz is still pretty unique. So adding that in with the RBI potential, I think does warrant maybe 50 could be mildly uncomfortable, but I think to say that getting 40, to call 40 home runs passe, it seems going a little bit too far to one side.
Not to mention the average too. Guys who hit as many home runs or more. Cody, there were only five other guys who hit 39 home runs or more last year, and three of those five had a much worse average. Cody Bellinger, 267. Joey Gallo, 209. Chris Davis, 247. Nelson Cruz did that with a 288 average. You've got Edwin Encarnacion going, you know, right around the same spot. You know, he's got first base eligibility, but he's going to bat 260. And I love E5. Don't get me wrong. Love E5. But the idea that you're going to sacrifice, four picks and lose 20 points of batting average because you don't want to fill your util spot that early, to me, it's bonkers. That's insane.
We are going to end up agreeing to disagree at some point in this podcast for sure, which is okay.
I will do no such thing.
Nor will I, by the way.
Andrew, do you think my pessimism or my skepticism of a top 50 pick for Nelson Cruz is warranted or unwarranted?
So where I'm willing to be on your side here, Chuck, is that at the point of like, will Nelson Cruz fall off at some point in time? He's inevitable. That's going to inevitably happen. But when you consider, like, if you take Justin's E5 argument, it's really hard to, like, how do you separate the two? I mean, outside of one playing nominally more games at first base, which gives them, you know, an extra slot of availability, like, Cruz is the better player. And I think that's hard to say otherwise. And, like, although he is getting older, you have to bake in some layer of predictability with that, as opposed to somebody like Reese Hoskins, who we can say it looks like he could have the power. But like, let's not forget guys like Brady Anderson hit 50 home runs once upon a time as well, never did that again. So,
well, I also think this whole thing stuns me for another reason, and that's that we're generally, you can listen to any podcast and regularly hear the word ageist. Generally, we are ageists. You know, it's a young man's game. It's gotten a lot younger since the PED thing. I mean, you can't overcome injuries the same way that you at once upon a time could. And it overall stuns me that young players with a lot of upside are getting pushed behind Nelson Cruz. And it's not that I don't think Nelson Cruz is a very good player. And he actually started his career kind of late, so he's not exactly as high a mileage MLB-er as you might think he is, despite his age. And I know we haven't seen anything out of any signs of him slowing down. But I will point to players, you know, like Adrian Beltre and other players that were consistent for a number of years. And then all of a sudden the fall off really hit, and it really hit hard. And there could be, you know, Reese Hoskins could have a down year, a complete adjustment year. It's spoken about all over the, all over the fantasy baseball landscape. But he's also on his way up. His performance arc historically is on its way up. As a general tendency of growth. And a guy like Nelson Cruz offers this consistent performance if he stays at the level that he's been at. And when a guy's going to be 38 years old, I think there's some level. And I'm a little stunned that Justin is so keen on pointing out 20 points of batting average when he's the person that comes on our podcast and tells us that he does not draft a team for batting average. He just sort of lets the chips fall where they may.
I don't. And I'll defend that by saying, just because something is my strategy doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to you know, promoted. There is inherent value in 20 points of batting average. If we're looking at two guys and where they should be ranked based on their numbers, yes, I do value batting average because it can be fluky. But, I mean, Nelson Cruz is pretty steady as it comes in terms of his batting average. I mean, hit 288 last year, 287 the year before, 302 the year before that, 271 the year before that. I mean, he's in the same range. He's going to hit between 270 to 80. E5, same way. Pretty steady guys. At the end of the day, like, I understand the argument if you go, you know, this is a 37-year-old player who's going to be turning 38 in the season. You know, there's good there. You know, we've already seen maybe a little bit of decline in skills. You know, we may see more. I don't like the age of the player. I get that. If that's your argument, that's fine. But if your argument is solely based on just him being utility only, that to me, I think you're using a bad process.
All right, Phil, we have yet to get your Twitter handle, which I certainly want to get out there with as much variation and exceptional work. I find your work to be exceptional, Phil. Despite what all the other your critics on Twitter say, I find it to be exceptional. So make sure you get that out there as you give us our final points on Nelson Cruz.
Flash 10 is 31.
Nice. And what do you think about Nelson Cruz this year? Are you would you love to have Nelson Cruz as one of your top five picks?
Absolutely, I would. You know, you talk about being an ageist. I don't know if you know this, Chuck, but I've been a high performance tennis coach for well over 30 years. There's a young fellow named Roger Federer who's 37 who just won another major 3 weeks ago. So I'm not even, and that's a sport where traditionally guys retired at age 28 to 30. He's still going strong. I kind of see Nelson Cruz as that type of guy. You know, Federer had a rough time for a season and a half, and then all of a sudden, boom, again. Looks the same way here. I take him in the top five. I don't have a problem with it. I want those home runs. I don't care about stolen bases from him. I'll get them somewhere else.
Well, you know, this is going to turn into the Chuck Caveat Show,
but we still love you,
Justin's
though. That's
term.
The whole point. You see?
This is going to be a bash fest on me today, and that's okay. I'm kind of used to it. It's sort of what I do for a living. Actually, I get bashed pretty regularly, and I know you guys aren't really, intending any of this personally. But the point
totally personal. This is 100. I've been brewing over this for over a month. This is personal, Chuck.
this goes back to when I made fun of you guys in the Will Smith trade with the Brewers, doesn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, my point being is that I think you guys mentioned sort of a bad process, or Justin does in particular, about just not wanting to draft someone because he's util only. I think there's a bad process in taking the most exceptionally aged players in other sports and trying to compare players in general to them. Like I brought up David Ortiz before. Like David Ortiz, you know, was that's a complete anomaly that we see in sports once every 25 years, if we're lucky. You know, Brett Favre playing as late as he did. Reggie White, not just to bring up ex-Packers, because they're, you know, let's talk about Tom Brady yesterday throwing for 500 yards at 40 years old. If you expect quarterbacks to play well until they're 40 years old, you will be wrong 95% of the time.
But on that same token, isn't Nelson Cruz one of those guys? He is the exception to the rule. Yeah, I don't typically want 37, 38-year-old players littering my lineup, but Nelson Cruz has been as steady as they come. He's played in 152 games at least the last four seasons. I mean, you don't get much more stable than Nelson Cruz.
That's a sample size, by the way. How do you value sample sizes, Chuck?
Well, I understand what you're saying about sample sizes, but 4 years ago, he was just an average age DH. Now, 4 years from now, I think every year you're extending the chances. You're improving the chances that injuries start happening, or he literally falls off a cliff. And that cliff appears. And this is me. I am a reactionary guy. Everyone says, "Look at how great this guy's been." I said, "Boy, we're looking at a guy who's pushing 38 years old. He'll be over halfway to 39 by the end of the season, and this is a guy I'm going to want to count on until the end of the year. And so I do understand, and I value Nelson Cruz. When I, Justin at one point asked me, well, where would you be comfortable taking Nelson Cruz? And I told him in the early 80s, which it stunned me to find out that the highest ADP that David Ortiz ever had was 75, meaning that I could have legitimately got David Ortiz, who I do think David Ortiz was at least as good, if not better, of a player, which sort of means that maybe our ideals of how we construct our rosters are changing over time. Maybe this, you guys view this as progress on the Nelson Cruz moving up the ADP charts. But I struggle with it a little bit more than you guys do, to say the least. And, you know, these next guys that we're going to cover are definitely going to sort of put an exclamation point on the fact that these utility-only players a lot of times are older players, and they start breaking down. And the first one we're going to talk about is the former five-category super stud of the Miami Marlins, known as Hanley Ramirez, which when I looked at his stats, I don't think I've ever seen somebody's stat lines jump all over the place more than his have. Andrew, why don't you start us on Hanley Ramirez and how you feel about him this year?
Sure. Hanley Ramirez is going to be he's going to be tough to gauge. He's coming off shoulder surgery. I saw that he had talked about saying he's completely healthy and he wants to play for 10 more years. I think statistically that looks unlikely. But there's still some things to like about Hanley Ramirez when you look at how he performed just based on some of the metric lines of last year. And that you could hope for bounce back, and that he kind of with every down year has come with an up year. And the most interesting thing I actually found when looking at Hanley Ramirez, and this is probably my biggest reason to be pessimistic, is that Hanley Ramirez is making $22 million this year. And he's got a vesting option for $22 million next year based on him reaching 1,050 plate appearances between 2017 and 2018, which means if he hits 450 plate appearances this year, he's going to make $22 million next year. I think whether it be the Red Sox or any other team, they're going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's a valid point because, like I said, we have a lot of variation. You don't know if you're getting batting average or you're not getting batting average. You don't know what level of home run hitter you're getting. You're probably getting double digits, but you don't really know if you're going to get 25 or 23 or maybe close to 30. He is in a very good situation. So let's go to Phil next. Have you given much thought to the often grumpy? I find him grumpy and moody, just trying to watch him play on a regular basis and sporadic. How do you feel about Hanley Ramirez this year?
In DFS, I love him. In season-long leagues, I don't like him for the reasons that Andrew had mentioned, you know, the plate appearances kicking, making that kick in for his 2019 or 2019 contract. That's huge. That's why the Red Sox are going after JD Ramirez so hard, because they don't want to pay this guy $22 million in 2019 or 2019. They just don't want that. And you'll see that someone else is going to take that role if they don't get him. They don't want that. They do not want to pay that contract. And if they get a guy like JD Martinez, then they don't have to worry about that. Because when Hanley Ramirez goes to arbitrate or goes to the Players Association and said, hey, they damaged me and I can't get my $22 million, how are you going to do that when you're going up against JD Martinez? That being said, I'm not interested in him at all. And you said it best, Chuck. And see, we do agree with you on some things, brother.
I like that.
But here's the thing. It's like watching an elevator. There are times when he's stuck on the fifth floor and he's hitting the ball really well. And there are other times that he's stuck in the basement and we don't know where he is. And that kind of risk, there's some reward, but not maybe as high as it would have been 3 years ago. And he just makes me so nervous. And if they're not going to give him 497 plate appearances, and his ADP is 327, I think that's high, and I'm not going to pay that. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to take a pass on him.
I've actually been kind of surprised in my draft and hold leagues that Hanley has stuck around as long as he has, because just because there is some latent name value. And when you get into the 300 range, as many of you will find out or have found out already, the player pool is top heavy, but not deep. So he's kind of surprising me how long he's lasting, but not. That's not me disagreeing with your synopsis. And obviously there's a lot of other people that are skeptical as well. Justin, what are your thoughts on Pouty Boy Hanley?
Is that a nickname of his?
It is now. Yes. I have that kind of power in the media. I want to believe. But anyway, how you feel about him, Justin?
I mean, I understand you guys think that the Red Sox aren't going to want to allow him to get to those plate appearance totals, you know, so that way his option doesn't vest. Ultimately, the Red Sox are going to do whatever it takes to win. They want to win. If they don't sign J.D. Martinez, they'll be playing him plenty as long as he's healthy. And if he is healthy, and his health is like you said he is, I see no reason to see why he couldn't duplicate his 2016 totals, which were 30 home runs, 111 RBIs, 9 stolen bases, a 286, 361, 505 triple slash. I mean, he dealt with shoulder issues all year last year, still managed to knock out 23 home runs. You know, the average took a hit, but the BABIP was way down. He still walks a fair amount and gets on base. I actually like the ADP where it's at. I don't mind it, especially if you're in like a 12-team league and you can just put him on your reserve list or on your bench. That's fantastic. 15-team leagues, if you're going to have to roster him on a day-to-day basis, you're definitely going to need to add a little bit of roster flexibility. But he's a guy I paired with Josh Harrison, you know, in my 12-team NFBC draft. And it's perfect because Harrison can, you know, move around. He's got second and third base eligibility. Hanley sits on my util slot, and you know, if they're facing a ton of right-handed pitchers that week, you know, throw Harrison in there. If they're not, then Hanley goes. You know, if they do sign J.D. Martinez, obviously his totals are going to take a hit because he'll have a short side of platoon. But I don't think there's any guarantee that the Red Sox are going to sign J.D. Martinez. I know they've been the big name linked to them. I know it seems like an all but done deal, but we're getting close to Valentine's Day, and he hasn't signed, and he hasn't signed with the Red Sox. And if the Red Sox are going to make a move, they're going to do it before, you know, the end of February. So I think we're getting to a point where, you know, maybe Hanley's actually got some sneaky value right now.
Yeah, and this is actually, as far as ADP and stuff is concerned, this is actually the player that I like the most on the list as I'm ripping him apart for, you know, jogging leisurely after balls when he played shortstop. I also want to make this goofy analogy, which usually Justin doesn't like it when I do this before I ask him to speak, so I'll do it after this time. That's that when I looked at all the different positional eligibility that he had already, he's had outfield, third, short, and first. So I really want him to figure out a way to become catcher and second base eligible just so I can say he touched them all. And then maybe someone will do a stunt for fantasy players and have a player that's eligible at every offensive position within an entire season. And so you could draft him anywhere where the year after. I think that would be a really cool publicity stunt. That teams that are tanking, what do they have to lose? Maybe they could just throw us a bone and give us a guy eligible at all 8 offensive positions.
I heard that's Ohtani now.
It could be. We almost discussed Ohtani because Ohtani on a lot of sites is just DH only. So we almost discussed him, but it's really hard to kind of even conjecture what his value will be like for utility only. All right, Phil, let's start with you because you're a Cleveland Indian guy. And the next guy we're going to talk about is a former catcher for the Indians. And, you know, now he's in Detroit. I had some incredible seasons as an offensive catcher early in his career. And now he's coming off a really interesting heart ablation, which I didn't know ablation was a word until I looked him up. But anyway, and he's 39 years old. And Victor Martinez signed a 4-year, $68 million contract when he was 35. I think some of those, like Neil Walker should be angry. with Victor Martinez, because I think this is the kind of contract that hurts his value. But anyway, how do you feel about your former tribe mate, Victor Martinez, Phil?
And the Tigers, too, because, you know, when I was a kid, the Tigers were in the East and the Indians were in the Central. So I got to root for both teams. I have a lot of teams I like, probably why I do more mainstream now. And I don't get killed so much, but I like Victor Martinez. I know you don't like old guys, but I'm an old guy. See, I'm old enough to be his father, so I can actually appreciate what he's doing a little more because I know what it's like to age as an athlete. But the thing is, I was going to write him up as a sleeper this year, and I didn't. I like him, though. 552, that's his ADP. I like that, actually. You know, and I also can't figure out, what is a heart ablation? We need a doctor on this show.
Well, Justin just keeps adding things to his resume. So at some point or another, if there's like a, you know how you can get like an associate's degree, somehow maybe like a half PhD or something is on the way for Justin. But I do agree, 554. I mean, you don't have a lot to lose there. But also sure, that means we're not speaking to everybody out there, because if you don't play a deep league, you don't necessarily have to roster Victor Martinez. You have to see how it goes when the season starts. I mean, and he is still chalked in for a really good spot in that lineup. Justin, what are your thoughts on V-Mart?
I'm actually Googling what a heart ablation is.
All right.
I've already got it.
All right. Thank you.
So I can give this briefly and try to describe it in the simplest terms as I can. So a heart ablation is scarring or destroying of tissue in your heart that causes your heart to have an abnormal rhythm.
We're going to send you to the Baltics and get you a PA or a doctorate in something, and you could be a doctor too. When I lived in Greece, I saw kids do that, actually. And I think we're going to send you there. It's real cheap, by the way. You're going to love the Black Sea, bro.
Wow.
As long as they have internet there, you'll be all right.
It's got to be better than the Canadian winter.
Oh, much better. The fishing's great, too.
They say these procedures have about a 75% to 85% success rate. So, I mean, like, I guess that's, you know, a good... I don't want anything to do with this. This sounds awful. That sounds so fucking scary. It looks like he's been given a clean bill of health, and he's resumed... or he's been cleared to resume regular baseball activities. I mean, I know he had a big year in 2016 in which he hit 27 home runs, hit .289, and kind of was back to a little bit of the guy he was, in some previous seasons. But he's also been a guy who, at random points, has only hit 10 or 11 or 14 home runs in seasons. And so that just doesn't play. I mean, I'm sorry. This is one of those guys you grab off your waiver wires. But if I'm in a draft and hold situation, there's no reason for me to take a guy like Victor Martinez. I know he's going super late, and that's amazing. But you know what? There are like high profile rookie guys going super late too. And I think I'd rather invest in an upside like that than a guy who is 39 years old. And it literally has heart issues.
Yeah, it's a pretty scary situation overall. I'm actually partial against Victor Martinez this year because I'm big on Nick Castellanos this year.
Oh, good call.
I believe that, the clogged middle of the order when Upton got traded, et cetera, is not as clogged as it used to be. I know some people are calling for Nick Castellanos to hit second, but he could share the middle of the order with Miggy if Victor Martinez happens to fall off or need extra days off or this, that, or what have you. And I made fun of the Tigers in recent years that it's like watching old guys play softball because when they get on the bases, it's literally station to station. And as excited as I am about Castellanos, if he ends up with Victor Martinez and you know, and Miguel Cabrera on base in front of him, he could hit a no-run triple with both those guys on base. I mean, they are so slow of foot at this point. So I am definitely hoping that Castellanos either moves to second or to fifth. And I agree with Justin. That oddly enough, when you get to 554 in a draft and hold, my thoughts there are, okay, I've only got two shortstops with this other guy who might be shortstop eligible. I've only got this. That is a time when I'm even more prone to trying to make sure that my roster is safe so I don't have dead spots in the roster for huge chunks of the season. And I just don't think the chances of a 39-year-old coming back from a heart ablation, as described by Dr. Dewhurst, is the right way to try and recover, you know, some extra power and some extra RBIs in a player pool that is deep in home run upside. Okay. Even if we haven't seen it fully.
Could I ask a question, create a scenario that maybe I want to get your opinion, you guys. Let's say, for example, you're in an auction. You got $1 left and you still don't have any depth at all at your utility spot. Would you do it then? Would you go for a Victor Martinez if it was your last buck?
In an AL only, sure.
Right. But, I mean, just in a mixed league, no, you wouldn't do it, would you?
No. I mean, it would have to be a 24-team mixed league.
All right. I don't know of any that would let me play in, so okay.
Our staff league actually may be a 20-team mixed league. It's
going that way.
But, I mean, like, what did you say his ADP was?
554.
Yeah, 554. Yeah, something, let me see.
Yeah, I think 552, yeah.
Yeah, it's 552.57.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I think, I mean, the name going, or one of the names going right below him is Kyle Tucker. Like, I think I'd rather take the upside on Kyle Tucker making a major league debut, or Brendan Rodgers, you know, is going below him. I think I'd rather take my shots on those guys and the potential upside, because, I mean, if we were saying that we thought Victor Martinez had, like, 40 home run upside, but there was maybe just a 15% chance he got there, or a 10% chance he got there, I'd be like, okay, I can buy that. But I don't think – I think his upside is what we saw in 2016. So, like, are we really saying that 27 home runs and a .289 average is the kind of upside we're choosing with our last spot? I think if I'm just throwing a buck on a guy – I mean, in an AL only, like I said, like – at bats in, you know, plate appearances is currency in mono leagues, but in a mixed league, give me the upside of one of those rookies instead.
That's a good point. Very
Andrew,
good, guys.
Andrew, you get to chime in too. What are your, what are your thoughts?
Wait, please call him Dr. Dewhurst from now on. Like that.
It does ring off the tongue, doesn't it?
The only case I have to make for Victor Martinez is that his peripheral stats in 2017 were largely the same as they were in 2016, just with significantly less production. The reason why I would be pessimistic against Victor Martinez is, I mean, obviously heart problems are bad. I don't think you need your doctorate to understand that.
They don't call him the best in the business for nothing.
That's right.
Ablation, eh? Wow, that's a great word though, man.
But you also have to remember that the 2016 Tigers and the 2018 Tigers are two very different teams. Yeah. So, like, the RBI opportunity and the run scored opportunity might not be there, because that roster, like, their lineup's probably not going to be very good. And when I say probably, I mean likely not going to be very good.
Look at the back half of that lineup. James
Dixon
McCann,
Machado?
Leonis Marquez. Dixon Machado and Jose Iglesias. I mean, and Mikey Matuk leading off, Jaime Candelario batting second. I mean, this, like, you know, I love Miggy, but, like, even if Miggy wasn't dealing with back problems, you'd have to downgrade him just because of this lineup. I mean, the chances that anybody gets to, like, 90 RBIs in this lineup is few and far between.
Yeah,
and you can imagine, as a rebuilding team, as a rebuilding team, can you imagine how much they would rather disperse the amount of money that they're paying Victor Martinez right now to four or five different young players to see what they had versus a guy who is obviously, I mean, this has got to be the last year of his career. It's probably like a 99% probability that we are seeing the last of Victor Martinez. And he was a really good player. And some of his peripherals that you guys are pointing to, his runs at walking more than he strikes out, et cetera. I mean, these are accomplishments we're not going to see again. So I don't want to poo-poo the guy so much that it looks like I'm looking down in his career. But what you guys are saying is absolutely correct, that this lineup is the opposite of what it used to be as far as punch and upside. And so that is definitely going to downgrade Victor Martinez as well.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add to that too, Chuck, is that there's no – if Victor Martinez doesn't have a good spring, the Tigers have no reason to carry him on the roster this year. He's in the last year of his contract.
Yeah, I do think he's the kind of guy that would get picked up at least to DH on a semi-regular basis else.
You say that, but you've got guys like Mark Reynolds and Logan Morrison who don't even have a job.
Well, yeah, but just remember that if he were released, that the other team would just owe the major league minimum. And all of a sudden, you know, Adrian Gonzalez becomes a starting first baseman when that's the case.
But I think part of the reason those guys aren't employed right now is, I mean, off the top of your head, who needs a DH right now?
that's a valid point.
I mean, he can't play in the National League. And most of the American League teams have a DH right now. And so, I think don't get me wrong, I don't think that would happen. One, the Tigers are going to want to sell some tickets. And I think Victor Martinez is one of the few reasons maybe for people to come to the ballpark. And the Tigers have nothing, absolutely nothing in the upper levels of their system that would be worth DFAing him. I mean, it's not like they're going to bring up, you know, Jacoby Jones to replace, you know, Victor Martinez. So, I don't think that is likely, but at the same time, if he were to be DFA'd, I think that would be the end of his career. And he could take his $18 million for 2018 and go home.
Sure. All right. Now, I am contractually obligated at this point, because we've gone a couple sections without me making a caveat as to why I'm getting blasted on my utility only spot slant. And the next caveat I want to make is that two of the six leagues I was in last year were daily transaction leagues. And I really think in daily transaction leagues, utility onlys are harder to roster because there's times where you end up with players on your bench that you could put in if you had if you had that utility only spot. I also wanted to mention in this show, which I realize this concept just keeps sprawling over the entire show. But anyway, during the season, I think it's really hard to trade utility only players, meaning that very seldom do you call somebody up and say, "Hey, I noticed you're a little weak at utility. Maybe you really want this guy." I don't think that's usually how it happens. Usually injuries hit somebody and you want to say, "Hey, you know, I got an extra shortstop. You could really use somebody to fill in for a while. How about we put something together?" So those are more concepts that Justin Mason can rip me to shreds about as we move forward. But I also want to start with Justin on the next Cleveland Indian tagged in player and that I have, and that's Francisco Mejia, who I will openly admit, you can't scout a scorecard, you can't scout a Fangraphs deal on young players, etc. But this is a guy that I think has a chance to actually acquire positional eligibility during the season. They tried him at third in the AFL last year, and I cannot wait to hear Justin's take on young Mr. Mejia, who does not exactly have the greatest offensive catchers in front of him. So is a Schwarber-like role possible for Francisco Mejia going forward this year, Justin?
It's really hard to tell. He's raw as an actual catcher, like defensively. Like he needs more work. And so I think there's a real shot, and I think it's pretty likely that he'll start the year in the minor leagues. You know, there are some sites out there where he already has catcher eligibility. I know FanTrax on their settings, they have He's got catcher eligibility. I know in Toutworth he's going to have catcher eligibility because they go by a combination of major league starts and minor league starts. If you don't have catcher eligibility coming in, I it's really hard to draft this guy because while I think he would be a fantastic fantasy catcher, if he's not catcher eligible, his bat doesn't play at any other position. It really just doesn't, especially not at third. So I like him, and I think long term, once he gets, you know, better at actually receiving and calling games, I think he is going to be a top 10 catcher in fantasy. But until that happens, I just don't know how you can draft him.
All right, Andrew, how do you feel about Francisco Mejia, perhaps one of the more intriguing young utility-only players that we've seen in quite some time?
Yeah, I mean, I like Mejia in the sense that he can be promising. And at his draft position of 345, I mean, I'm mildly willing to inherit some risk at that point to try to get the upside. You would hope that he'll end up playing catcher. I mean, Yan Gomes is less than a stellar track record of staying healthy for a whole year. And Roberto Perez is, although defensively efficient, not all that exciting as a hitter. So I would hope that, you know, he's going to gain some sort of position eligibility this year because he's not going to be a full-time DH if he's on the roster, that's for sure. But with a 70-grade hit tool, there's hope there that, you know, when he's in, he can stabilize that average. I think the reason to be pessimistic on him is that he's yet to see any time in AAA. So as Justin noted, you know, there's a reason for him to not be in the majors this year.
Yeah, well, it's also, I find it very hard to project power. You know, Justin said that he doesn't think his bat plays in other spots. And when he said he didn't think it played at third, that made me think, you know, and Justin knows more about prospects than I do and deeper about on prospects than I am. But I do note in my skull, the reactionary tendency in me is to point out people that we weren't projecting much power for. I'm going to stick with the Indians here. How about Jason Kipnis was a guy who was not supposed to have a lot of power.
Francisco Lindor wasn't supposed to either.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, and that doesn't mean, no, those are, they play different positions. Every situation is different. So, you know, if you want to roll your eyes at me for my reactionary tendencies, I get it. I really do.
I'll be interested to hear what Phil's thoughts are on this because he is an Indians fan.
I lived in Akron, Canton, and I know him. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's going to know. To me, if I'm the Indians, I don't know why he isn't the centerpiece of a deal for, like, JT Realmuto.
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting slant and a way that they could go, especially a team. The Indians have spent a lot recently. In the last couple of years, they seem to be spending in their off seasons. But for years before that, they were pretty frugal. So you'd think player control over, you know, a high-level player like that would be very interesting.
Domingo Santana. I mean, he should be like a trade chip right now because this is a team that wants to win a World Series, and I just don't know that he – is going to help in that process for this year.
There you go, Phil. The ball is in your court.
Well, this is why Justin brought me on to talk about Francisco Mejia and to take advantage of my non-fantasy credentials. He's not going to catch this year. He's going to be in Double-A Akron, where he spent last season. By the way, he's a fantastic catcher with a big hose. He's, I believe now, the rumor is that he's Francisco Lindor's cousin, actually. But that's neither here nor there. It has nothing to do with fantasy. He's going to play third base. The key to seeing Francisco Mejia in the big leagues and his 193 ISO last season in 383 plate appearances in Canton, Akron, or I should say Akron, Canton, excuse me, Akronites. The deal is Jason Kipnis has to get moved. That's the only way he's going to get into the infield. They're loaded at catcher. They don't really need another catcher. I see what you're saying about Realmuto, but I think they're looking for something else. I'm not sure what that is. I think they're a pretty loaded team, though. If they get rid of Kipnis, I don't think they can trade a Kipnis for a Realmuto. I don't think that the Marlins want that salary. But this Mejia kid, is going to be really good. I was talking with Lenny Melnick this morning about him. I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but Lenny goes out to the Arizona Fall League, and he's there from day one to the end. He doesn't just go out there for that conference that the fantasy guys have. He's there for the whole time. And he talks to everybody, the ushers, scouts, and everybody likes this kid. They think he's got the tools to do things, but it's going to be at third base. That's where he's going to have to get in. As soon as Kipnis gets sent away, and he's going to, by the way, you're going to see that infield of, well, what you'll see probably is you'll see Jose Ramirez and Lindor up the middle. And then you're going to see at third base, Yandy Diaz, until this kid gets ready. And when he is ready, guess what, folks? He's going to be your third baseman, and I'm drafting him on that premise. Or I'm going to grab him off the waiver wire the second Jason Kipnis gets moved. There's my take on it.
Well, that is an interesting take. And, I mean, there's a lot to be said for them playing him at third base in the AFL last year. They even publicly announced that they were looking to add to his versatility. So there's something to be said for that. I'm a little upset with myself that I said throwing the ball to your court, and I didn't say add court or love court, because that would have
been okay, but I knew what you meant.
That would have been awesome. I missed it, and now I tried to go back and just probably made it worse.
Justin's going to fire you, dude.
Well, if he cuts my salary in half, I'm going to have to keep the job. I have figured that much. That much I've figured out, because it's just not a good job market right now for baseball in general, not just the major free agents.
You're irreplaceable, dude.
Oh, yeah. I'm something, that's for sure. He probably wants to drop the first INR.
I don't need to do more work, so you're not going anywhere, Chuck.
And I don't have time to help out because I'm busy too, so you're safe, bro.
Yeah, you are, with all your basketball basketball conquerings and what have you. We appreciate you cutting out the time just to talk to us, Phil. I do want to talk about Kendrys Morales. We can all go back and remember the errant home run celebration that cost him years on his career. But he probably was going to be a DH only now at this point anyway, because being fleet of foot was never really his thing. But Kendrys Morales is sort of an interesting guy. I boosted him way up charts last year because I figured his home run total may very well jump going to Sky Dome, or, well, it's not Sky Dome anymore, Rogers Center. But the point being is, now all of a sudden, 2 years in a row, Rogers Center has sort of played as a league average home run place, and it was thought to be, Coors Field North before that. So, Justin, do you think Kendrys Morales is going too late? He seems to have been a pretty steady source. He was hidden in a bad Toronto team last year, but his year really wasn't that bad.
No, his year was actually pretty nice. I mean, the average dipped a little bit. I would expect him to kind of break or cut the difference between his first year with the Blue Jays and his last year with the Royals. So, somewhere between 250 and 260. But, I mean, he's hit 28 and 30 home runs the last 2 years. He gets plenty of RBIs. I don't have his – someone will have to tell me what his ADP is, but I know it's way too late for what he can provide.
297.
Yeah, 297. That seems criminal to me that he's going that late. Guys going above him that probably shouldn't be. Matt Kemp, who may not have a team. Carlos Gonzalez, who does not have a team. Todd Frazier, who does not have a team. I mean, this is a ridiculous list of people going in front of him because he's util only. Give me the shares of Kendrys Morales.
Yeah, I will actually agree with the fact that some of these guys at the end of this list, to me, are going criminally low, and that may be because they're utility only. And so the main issue that we have against each other, pitted against each other, is that I can't fathom taking utility only in my first four or five picks, which is where Nelson Cruz is going, even though I like the player. But I do agree that Kendrys Morales, he went way, way, way too late, well after Hanley Ramirez. To be honest with you, I think I would much rather have Kendrys Morales than Hanley Ramirez at this point.
Agreed.
How about you? How about you, Dr. AD? What do you think?
First thing, it's still the Sky Dome. I don't care if they want to call it the Rogers Center. Still the Sky Dome. My tax money paid for it. I'll call it what I like.
Absolutely.
I like the place that Morales is going in. I'm worried about his 8% drop in his zone contact percentage, though, and his 3% increase in swing strikes. Those things don't make me feel warm and fuzzy about that him coming back up to his 270 career average or somewhere close to it. But I mean, when you consider you're getting, he's going to hit fourth in the Blue Jays lineup, which isn't that bad, at least in the top four. You're getting him that really late. And I think there's some chance that he sees first place or first base eligibility this year, with Justin Smoke being not a sure thing to continue what he did last year. And if you had any injuries around first base, he could definitely find himself there for 20 games. So there's some reasons to be optimistic about what you're going to get from him.
Yeah, I agree. It's an awfully good spot offensively. That's for sure. I would like you to refrain from attacking Justin Smoke since I own him in the only league that I've drafted for this year. And I want to believe that since he was once traded for Cliff Lee, that's the guy who he is. From way back then. So, you know, if I want to live in this sort of, drug-induced coma that I'm speaking of, I would prefer if you would not Justin Smoke bash. I think he's going to hit 50 home runs and just let me live there, okay? What about you, Phil? How do you feel about Kendrys Morales?
You're making my cough come back, Chuck. you know what I want to see? I want to see Yangervis Solarte and Kendrys Morales in a foot race.
I think Solarte is going to win that one pretty handily.
Yeah. You know what else I want to see? I want to see who's going to score the most runs in that lineup with Solarte, Morales, and Smoke. I mean, they're going to have to hit 50. He's going to have to hit 50 home runs. Chuck, that's the only way he's going to score a run. I mean, those guys, I'm an old guy. I'll be 53 this summer, and I might be the fastest player on that team. But Kendrys Morales, 297, that does seem criminal, doesn't it? You know, here's a guy who has multiple bomb capacity per game, almost. You know, I'm talking from a DFS standpoint. Here's a guy with 30 home run capability. Here's a guy with 90 RBI capability or more. 260, 270 batting average or more. And you're getting him in the between, if you're in a 10-team league, I guess it would be, what, the 29th round, 28th round? Come on, really?
Yeah, and we're comparing two guys, between Victor Martinez and Kendrys Morales.
Now I am going to draft for sure because I'm going to come back and prove you all wrong.
But the biggest thing to me is that Toronto lineup, okay, is not racked and stacked like it once was, and I'm not about to pretend that it is. But you know, Kevin Pillar, and even the relative upside, of the ups and downs of Russell Martin. I mean, the peripheral players are not Dixon Machado and Mikey Mantoux.
Yeah, there's a big difference between that Detroit lineup and that Toronto lineup. I mean, I'll like, don't get me wrong, Tulo is a shell of the shell of his former self. But I mean, I actually like the addition of Randall Grichuk to that lineup. I mean, when your nine hitter is Pillar versus Jose Iglesias, I think that is a pretty stark difference.
And even just like what you said about the upper levels of the minor leagues, I mean, the buzz that was around Teoscar Hernandez alone seems to be much more than any buzz you get out of, upper level Tiger prospects.
They have, they've got Rowdy Tellez, who's still down there, Anthony Alford, who's still down there. I mean, this is a team that it's not like deep in their minors, but one, they've got some real elite talent in Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, though neither of them will likely be up this year. But they've got some guys who will be, average to above average major league players in the high levels of the minors. So I think this is, and it's a team I think that wants to try to compete. They've got a decent rotation if they can all come back healthy and kind of come back to form after a down year last year. They've got an interesting bullpen. I don't want to say it's good, but it's interesting. And they've got a lineup of aging guys. And so I think, the Curtis Granderson signing to me signaled that they're going to make a run at this. It may blow up in their face, but they're going to try to go for it, where the Tigers are not going for anything.
Yeah, I mean, and the Blue Jays too. I mean, as far as team morale is concerned, the Blue Jays pitching staff has upside. You know, Aaron Sanchez was easily within the top 100 before his, you know, finger problems, etc. So there's multiple fronts to think that Kendrys Morales is in a much better situation than a lot of the guys that we've spoken about so far. And he's the one that we seem to universally think is most criminally being underdrafted. And that's exactly how I feel about him. I would like to touch on Albert Pujols. This is another guy I'm going to point to as to why there's so many free agents that are still unsigned that are in their mid-30s. And I'm pretty sure that Tony Clark is going to want to have a meeting with me, so I stop mentioning this factor. But Albert Pujols is a guy that is set to make a ton of money yet, and he's on a team that decided to build up extra hitters around him this offseason, and yet here we stand, the last utility only we're talking about. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Phil, how do you feel about Albert Pujols? Talking about a guy who is painful to watch him run. That is what Albert Pujols has become. What do you think, Phil?
Can we talk about Chin Soo Choo instead? I've worked all day pronouncing that.
Oh, you nailed it. And I think I did forget Chin Soo Choo on the thing. And Chin Soo Choo is claiming that he's still going to play the outfield. And wow. So I think they're – and I do believe that Albert Pujols is scheduled to play 2 days a week at first base. So maybe he is a first baseman yet by June for sure.
No. What do you think? You know, I have friends in the St. Louis Cardinal organization who insist now that Albert Pujols isn't really 38. He's more like 58. And that could be, I don't care. I can't touch this guy. I won championships, league championships with this dude in some pretty good leagues with some very stiff competition. And I'm a nostalgic guy. As you guys all know, I love the old stuff. And as you heard when I talked about Victor Martinez, but I wouldn't pay 80 cents for Albert Pujols. I'm afraid of that guy. I'm afraid he's going to get hurt. Remember a couple seasons ago, everyone thought, yay, this is going to be something special. And he missed the entire season with heel problems and plantar fasciitis, whatever it is. Dr. Andrew will go up and take care of that and pronounce it right for me, of course. But at the end of the day, I just can't do it. I mean, can any of you guys?
It is tough, and you want to talk about somebody who went really late in my draft and hold league. Mm-hmm. When I talk in really late, I mean really late. Andrew, why don't you chime in? How do you feel about Mr. Pujols?
Yeah, I feel like if he didn't fall off the cliff last year, he's definitely slowly tumbling off of it at this point. It's like the best thing to say about him is he played 149 games last year.
I shouldn't be laughing. I should put myself on mute.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same, Justin. Sorry.
But I mean, I guess at the price you're taking him, if it's free, maybe you're willing to play that lottery ticket on him bouncing back up to 31 home runs and he'll give you another 100 RBIs. But I mean, is he really going to play twice a week at first base? Is like, I know that's what they're saying, but I don't see it. I feel like he's either DHing or twice a week he's not playing for Ohtani to DH.
I think the other question is, can you really take a guy who's top five average salary in all of baseball and move him down in the lineup?
Oh, I think you absolutely can, Chuck. Like, I think the salary at this point is aside. Like, you go and like teams, like the Tigers paid all the money for Victor Martinez and all the money for, you know, for Miggy and Verlander to keep a window open. The Angels essentially paid the money to keep open their window, essentially, with Trout coming up. To them, like, the money doesn't matter. Like, the park's going to be full. People are there to see Trout. And, I mean, if you want to have, you know, a yearly Pujols bobblehead because he's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer and you can make the case to say he's the best hitter of his generation, then you're welcome to do so. But I mean, if they need to move him down to sixth or seventh, I don't think that's going to stop them from doing so.
My mind is hearkening back to when he hit his 500th home run, I believe it was. I hope that's the right number. But anyway, it was the least ballyhooed 500th home run I had ever seen. And largely, I think it was because, you know, he had moved from St. Louis to Anaheim. And a lot of the time in Anaheim has been, I mean, you know, not that he wasn't good for a few seasons, but they're paying him for a few more. Justin, what do you feel about the ADP for Pujols?
What was the ADP?
875. I'm not exactly sure. Andrew's probably
310. It's 310.
Holy cow! You can get him way in front of some of these other people.
he's for $8 too, by the way. That's his auction value, guy.
Yeah, no, I'm not touching him at that price. I'd rather have Victor Robles going after him. Aforementioned Teoscar Hernandez, who no longer has his playing spot. Wilmer Flores going after him. It's like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, Albert Pujols to me is a surefire Hall of Famer. I mean, this is a guy who is, let's see, he's going to finish with, you know, 600 and, I don't know, probably 700 home runs. I mean, he actually might act, there's a legitimate shot considering he's under contract till 2021 that he could, you know, he's got 619 right now. He could get another, maybe not 700, maybe like 660, you know, 670 in terms of home runs before things are all said and done. I just, in terms of fantasy, like, just everything is it really, you know, Andrew mentioned that he maybe slowly was falling off the cliff. I think it's happening a lot faster than just slowly. His O swing percentage went up almost 3 percentage points. His contact percentage went down 4.5 points. His swing strike percentage went up. He's not seeing the ball well. He's not being able to catch up to the ball. Sometimes it looks like he's only swinging with his upper body, which is extremely troublesome. I think the foot problems are still bothering him, which is insane that he's even been able to, you know, play as many games as he has over the course of the last 4 years. He's gotten to at least 593 plate appearances in each of the last four seasons. But even that was only enough for 23 home runs last year. So we're talking about a guy that, like, max the ceiling is like a 25 home run guy with like a 240, 250 average. Count me out on that.
You know, he's a guy, he hasn't quit. He hasn't quit on that contract. His body has quit on him.
Yes.
I think that's very fair to say. I mean, you know, he did everything he could. He changed his approach to where, you know, he hit the 30-plus home runs for a while, et cetera. You know, it is sad to see. I mean, as a baseball fan, he just, you know, he never really had the body type that looked like he was going to play well until he was 40. And it's all come to a screeching halt. It does say a lot, the fact that home run I thought was wasn't very ballyhooed. I thought it was 500 and it was 600. So that'll tell you how it sort of just affirms my point that there really was not much fanfare around such a historic milestone in this day and age. I do want Phil to be able to tell us about Shin-Soo Choo, though, because it sounds like he did some serious studying on Shin-Soo Choo, who is kind of an interesting player who used to steal quite a bit, a high on base percentage guy. So I know people in OBP leagues like him more, and a Texas roster that's completely in flux. Tell us about Shin-Soo Choo, Phil.
The OBP leagues love him. Why wouldn't they? He still has a great eye at the plate. The wheels are gone, though, man. That's a bummer. He's another one that I really liked watching play in his prime. And I don't mean to degrade him, but this is a fantasy baseball show, and it's not like real baseball. He's a great contributor in real baseball. He's a pretty decent contributor at times to fantasy baseball, but I don't really have a whole lot of interest in him. $5 seems a lot to me in an auction. Maybe I can get him cheaper. The thing that makes me nervous about him, and I guess you guys could probably figure out, I know Justin already knows this, is that I try to play it pretty safe in my season-long leagues. And because I get that DFS stuff that, you know, where I play a lot of risk, so I kind of like to balance things out so I can walk straight. And the thing is Willie Calhoun is going to be there. He's going to be wanting some at-bats. And Adrian Beltre, they're going to want to give him days off. You know, it's hard to believe, but he's another one who's aging. and they want to, you know, prolong his career as long as they can. If Shin-Soo Choo does not start out hot, I don't know what's going to happen to him. I really don't. I don't know. I don't see the amount of plate appearances that I'm going to need to add him to my roster. I mean, I love the guy. He's another one who's been on teams that I've won leagues with, but I just can't do it anymore. And I don't know if anyone else can. If you can, you know, God bless you. I hope he has the greatest year of all and people tell me I'm stupid. It wouldn't be the first time, but I'm not going to take that chance.
Yeah, I mean, he's a hard guy to pin down exactly what you're going to get statistically. And I think that's what's adding to the, you know, the lackluster appeal, because you really don't know for sure that you're getting much power. You don't know for sure that you're getting much average. You don't know for sure that you're getting any speed. I mean, those are not good signs. But at the same time, he's got kind of an interesting situation on that roster in so much as they have a lot of, you know, Joey Gallo kind of movable, flammable pieces that you don't know exactly which way they're going to go. And they're paying Shin-Soo Choo enough money that I have a feeling that he's going to weasel his way into at bats. I'm a little more optimistic than you are about that, Phil. You agree or disagree, Justin?
I think as long as he's healthy, I did not realize he played so many games in the outfield. So actually, wow, that's, I really thought he would have only maybe played 20 or 30 games in the outfield, but it looks like he got over 70 out there. So that seems a little crazy to me. I think they're going to try to do their best to use the DH as kind of a rotating spot to give lots of guys days off, which means you're going to see Choo out in the outfield probably, you know, 4 to 5 days, you know, a week. Which to me feels dangerous with a guy with his injury history, but he was really good last year. I mean, you know, hit .261, .357, .423, 22 home runs, 12 stolen bases. I think the stolen bases may be a little bit fluky, and maybe he's more of like a 20 home run, 5 stolen base guy. But like in your on base percentage leagues, gets a nice little boost because he walks, you know, 12 to 11% of the time most seasons. So OBP leagues, I'll take a shot, but average leagues, I think I'll probably pass.
Yeah, it is worth noting. I mean, Phil's right. I mean, he's just been such a fundamentally sound player over time. And obviously, with a little more health, or if he would have come over to us a little bit earlier, he would have like a ridiculous pedigree and maybe even a bigger spot in our hearts as fantasy players over time. AD, Mr. Dewhurst, what do you think?
Yeah, 254 ADP on Choo. I mean, if you can get what he did last year at that ADP, I mean, you're taking that right to the bank. But, yeah, I mean, I think he played 75 games in the outfield last year, and it's going to be kind of a revolving door with trying to get Willie Calhoun in, you know, getting everyone the time they need to play, Beltre as well. So, I mean, I like that he played 150 games. I'm not in love with him playing 75 of those and like half of those games in the outfield. But I mean, I think if your roster, it depends on your roster construction. I think you can make a case for that to take him in that spot. And if you can get him 50 picks later, I mean, I think it's a surefire, like not the worst thing you'll ever do in your life.
No, there's some intrinsic value, some steadying force here, especially if you're somebody who likes to take a lot of chances, which our esteemed guest Phil Nasons is telling us he takes his chances in DFS, plays her by the book in regular season. Once again, why don't you tell everyone where you can be reached, Phil, and give us any other avenues in which we can find your work regularly.
All right. Okay. Well, here's the thing. I am very lucky that I've been around long enough, and even though I kind of ride the fence between the mainstream, regular, real, if you will, sports and fantasy, I'm the lead NBA writer for a gentleman named Laura Michaels at creativesport.2, and I also do a lot more now behind the scenes, but at Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports, and I'm very lucky to be there. You can find me at FlashTennis31, and I'm so honored to be asked. I don't do many fantasy shows anymore, but this is one I'll always make time for. You guys do a great job. It's one of the few I actually listen to. And Justin's my dude. He's been my dude since the day I met him. And continued success, guys.
Well, thank you so much. You are helping add to our success by loaning our loaning your voice to us here briefly to start the fantasy drafting season. We really appreciate it. Justin, you didn't give us your credentials earlier in the show. I think there's probably at least one or two fantasy people out in the world yet that do not have follow you on Twitter. So you should probably mention that and tell us what's next for you.
Oh, man, you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Let's see. I got a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, all the podcasts here, Friends of Fantasy Benefits. I am working on editing and formatting the Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide. Hopefully, that'll be out in the next week or so. You can read all my written work at FanGraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Hear me on the Great Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Sleeper in the Bus Podcast, Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Sundays for the Tat Wars Hour with the aforementioned Laura Michaels. I'm probably forgetting other stuff, but yeah, it's a lot. I'm really busy, but I appreciate all the love and support I've gotten recently for people who have been congratulating me on some advancements in my career. It is largely thanks to the guys here at Friends Fantasy Benefits, who I ride their coattails like there's no tomorrow.
Wow. Hey, Chuck, excuse me, I forgot something. Can I bring something up real quick?
Sure.
Lenny Melling Fantasy Sports, he's putting out the very first fantasy baseball guide for the show, and that'll be out by the 10th.
Wow, and very nice.
And I'm writing it, and I have a DFS mini book in there.
Well, that's always a good thing. There are a lot of people who like to play that DFS for sure. Justin, I have one question for you, brother. Is there any truth that since your wife is going to Tout Wars, that they're going to suddenly have a red carpet entry, and we're going to get to see you guys all dolled up, and you know, paparazzi style? Is there any truth to that?
There may be a little bit of truth that I will be showing up to Foley's dressed up for me. Like, I'm not like one of those guys that like dresses up, we're gonna be going out to Nobu for dinner. For those who don't know, that's a really, really high class sushi restaurant, and then heading over to Foley's on Friday night for the party. So we will be dressed to, you know, for my wife it'll be to the nines, for me it'll be to the sevens, but we will definitely I'll be looking my best, which is, you know, upscale homeless.
Full regalia. Andrew, despite the intimidating fact that we have a lot of star power on the show with us, and we're mere fantasy underlings, why don't you also tout all the work that you're doing for us, Andrew, and where you can be reached, etc.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. You'll be able to find my written work at Friends with Fantasy Benefits for baseball. We'll be doing this podcast every Monday. You can find my hockey podcast, which is coming out weekly, and I have a weekly hockey article.
Well, I appreciate all the work that you guys do, and how it, you know, it makes me look good as well, just being able to be in your company. I appreciate that. I am Chuck Anderson at Just Chucking It. I do a weekly article during the baseball season of note, little tidbits. I do that. I've got my rankings done for the site. Looking forward to the Great Fantasy Invitational that Justin is hosting and all of the above. So in summary, I'm just a schmo for some reason that got to host the podcast, which I do appreciate. So thanks everyone for their work on the utility only, and Justin and I agree to disagree. I strongly prefer to leave my utility spot open until the end of my drafts. So anyway, thank you guys so much for the listen. We're doing what we can to fill this dead spot in the cold stove, if you will, and we will keep doing that for you. Thank you so much again, Phil, and we will be certain to have you back as often as we possibly can. Thanks everyone. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting
All right, Andrew, just so you know, at Dr. Dewhurst is available on Twitter. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you should do that, dude.